Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has been buying rental properties for about 8 years. And in that time, he's had tenants take advantage of him. He's been sued by tenants. He's had contractors rip him off. And he's had to evict tenants for not paying rent. Even with those bad things happening, he still loves rentals and thinks there's way more good to owning rental properties than bad. So on the show today, we're going to talk about some of the bad things that have happened to him and how he's dealt with them. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 60 seconds and we'll meet Jaspreet Singh from Michigan. If you're a do-it-yourself landlord and you're looking for the ultimate online resource to help you better manage your rentals, check out Rentler. They have everything you could possibly need to help you better manage your rental properties, from taking online applications to tenant screenings and online payment processing. They have a special offer just for our listeners. If you sign up for a tenant screening, they'll give you a free year of ACH payment processing. Just reach out to their customer service department after you order. For more information, go to tryrentler.com/bank. That's TryRentler.com/bank.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hey, Jaspreet, welcome to the podcast. Let's start at the very beginning. How did you first get started buying rental properties?
Hey, Dan, thank you for having me. So it was kind of funny. I was in college. I was 19 and I was making money from another business I was running in college, and I started reading business books. I always grew up thinking I was going to be a doctor. That's what my parents always wanted me to do. So I was never exposed to anything outside of science or medicine. I didn't even know what investing or entrepreneurship or any of that stuff was. So I started reading business books, and every business book I read said that wealthy people invest in real estate. I had no idea what that meant,
right.
But I was like, okay, I need to figure out what this is. I need to start investing in real estate. And it was kind of funny because it was after my sophomore year, I was studying for my MCAT, which is the medical college admission test. So it's the exam you take to get into medical school. And at this time, the real estate market was super, super depressed. This was like 2010, 2011. So the market was like at rock bottom in real estate. And so, like, I would study all day long, and I'd be in the library. And then anytime I would take a break, I would go on and read, like, you know, financial news or whatever. And everything kept talking about real estate is low, real estate is low, real estate is low. So I was like, okay, what the heck? So I started looking at real estate properties, started working with a broker who knew nothing about investment real estate.
Sure.
And from there, I ended up finding a condo on sale for very cheap, and I put in an offer and started, and that was my first property.
Now, how did you even get the broker to take you seriously? I mean, you're a 19-year-old kid. Like, did you find, was it hard finding a realtor that would even take you seriously and invest their time into working with you?
Not really, because anybody wanted to work, especially in real estate.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just, nobody was buying anything except for a few investors. So that wasn't too difficult. The tough part was trying to find investment deals, because I worked with a few different brokers, and, you know, they were like, oh, investment means really, really nice home.
I'm right.
Like, no, show me something beat up.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So how that was a big learning curve.
So like, how did you know that? So like, I mean, obviously today, like, I think most people listening to the show know that you're going to make a lot more money with a beat up property that you can add some value to. But, mm-hmm. you know, being 19 and just getting started, how did you know, like, in, hey, that this isn't right, what the realtor is trying to guide me to? Like, was it just from the research you had done?
It was honestly just books and the amount of money I had.
Okay.
And I didn't want to pay a lot of money because I didn't have a lot of money. So I was like, yo, show me something cheap that I can afford, which usually meant beat up.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. So you buy that first property and you didn't live there. That was purely a rental.
Yeah, purely a rental. And it was in decent shape. I needed to kind of do a whole bunch of cosmetic work. Luckily, it was a condo. So, you know, you don't have to worry about like foundational issues as much or like structural issues. You're really just worrying about what's inside the walls.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of work, it was just cosmetic. So it wasn't too expensive.
Okay.
And
How did the numbers work on that? Because with a condo, a lot of investors don't like buying condos because of the condo fees that can add, I guess, take away from your cash flow. Did the numbers, like, looking back on it now, like, would you buy that deal today?
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about a 20% cash on cash return.
Oh, okay.
So
that was pretty good.
You're looking at 2010, 2011 deals.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Okay. So how did it work out? Like, when you got it fixed up and got your tenants in there, how did everything work out?
Well, at first it was super exciting because I was like, oh my God, I got my first tenant.
Yeah.
Let me take the people out to lunch. Let me buy them flowers. But I kept reading these books and they were like, you know, don't make friends with the tenant. Make sure it's a business relationship. So I held myself back, even though I really, really wanted to like become best friends with my tenants.
Mm-hmm.
But very quickly, I realized that these tenants are kind of difficult. They were actually the most difficult tenants I've had to deal with so far. But so as soon as they moved in, everything was wrong. Like everything was wrong with the property. And this is, you know, my first deal, so I don't know what to do or what was going on.
Right.
I had a management company, and apparently this management company wasn't even a real management company. I realized later, but I went with the cheapest management company I could find. So that was my first.
Yeah.
Then they didn't even put the tenants on a lease somehow. I don't know how that's possible. You're going to move in a tenant without having them sign a lease.
Yeah.
And then they start calling my management company. My management company is not returning their calls, is not taking care of them. So then they started calling me. And so they were like, oh, Jaspreet, I was cutting a tomato on my countertop and I scratched the countertop. I need a new countertop. And I was like, I don't know how to deal with, you know, these type of things. Like, okay, I'll buy you a new countertop. And so I was literally paying so much money for unnecessary things. I ended up buying like a new appliance. Even though I put in brand new stainless steel appliances for my tenants already, it's just like crazy thing after crazy thing. And I would get calls from them like just crying and screaming and all these things. When literally, I mean, the property was top notch. Like I put in money to make sure it was very, very nice because I wanted to have kind of like the nice properties, you know, kind of get that extra luxury premium. And so, I mean, everything was good and done right. They just, you know, were.
Do you think that they just saw you, that they thought you were just some young rich kid and they maybe saw that they could take advantage of you?
Oh my God. Yeah. And it was funny because one time, like I felt so bad. I literally went to the property and I wasn't a rich kid. Like, you know,
right.
I was just,
of course.
I had, everything
yeah.
I had was going to my property.
Right.
And I literally went there and I came in with cash and I gave them cash because I felt so bad. I gave my tenants cash. I was like, here, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't know what to do. I was like, here, fix whatever is wrong. Sorry for your troubles. And so it was just, it was crazy.
And so those tenants, that they ended up, after you had done so much nice things for them, they ended up suing you?
Yeah. So they moved out. So what happened was I changed my management company and things started to go much better because now I had a new management company who was actually like adept at managing real estate. So they knew how to like take care of tenants and handle all these things. And so we got a tenant, it was called a work order where they file something where they want something done. And they said that the paint was chipping in the bathtub. So I send in my contractor and he goes to look at it. He's like, yeah, it's just a small little chip and whatever. And I was like, okay, go and reglaze the tub and also install a handicap pole because our tenants are older. They didn't request it. I was like, just for some extra safety and to give them something else. He goes back to do the work. And the tenant's like, oh, sorry, we don't feel good. And the wife was like, my husband slipped at our friend's barbecue. So he's, you know, not feeling good. So come back a different day. So they kept putting us off. And then what happens was, next thing we know, we get a lawsuit that our bathtub is not functioning properly. Their claim was that the bathtub got too slippery when the water was on, so it caused the husband to slip and fall.
Wow.
And it was funny because we had documentation saying that he slipped and fell at his friend's barbecue. And right. So we were like, look, well, we were up to city code. We were trying to actually go out of our way to install this handicap pole. We have this in our records. And what do you expect is going to happen when a bathtub gets wet? It's going to get slippery.
Of course.
It was a bogus lawsuit. I had insurance, luckily. Almost didn't. There was a little period of time where my insurance lapsed, but luckily I had insurance, and so.
What happened? Like when you got served that they were suing you, did you just turn that over to your insurance company?
Well, I didn't know what to do. Again, I was like, really young.
Right.
And I actually started freaking out. I was like, oh my God, what do I do?
Yeah.
So I had my own real estate attorney and I looked at my insurance and I saw that when I got the lawsuit, I was not insured because something happened I was changing insurances. It was like a week or 2 week period where I did not have insurance.
Okay.
And during that time is when I got served. So I was just like, oh my God, what do I do now?
Right.
I called up my personal attorney and he was like, okay, well, I'm going to charge you whatever, $300 an hour. And, you know, lawsuits, you know, they can run up tens of thousands of dollars very easily. And I was like, oh my God. And then I talked to my insurance adjuster. And luckily, because this alleged slip and fall happened during the time that we were covered, it was all covered by insurance. So then I just sent it to the insurance company. And they pretty much did everything. They did some meetings with me. I mean, it was a little bit of a hassle because then, you know, they want all these documents.
Right.
They need, like, constant interviews and blah, 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 blah. They got to talk to your contractor. So, you know, it's a headache, but, you know, they cover it.
Yeah.
And then
so it didn't cost you anything out of pocket other than that first attorney you spoke to.
Like, correct.
That's great. Now, having a start like that, with that being your first deal, and obviously you've stuck with this and you've been building out your portfolio over the last 8 years, like for a lot of people, I feel like that would shake them, having these horrible tenants, having a lawsuit with your first tenant. Like, was your confidence shaken at all? Like, were you thinking, well, maybe this isn't for me?
That's a good question. You know, not too much because every time I would read these books, I would just see like, okay, there are people out there that own like huge apartment complexes and skyscrapers. And, you know, there's no way that every real estate investor is going to always be dealing with these issues.
Right.
So I knew that it's possible that you can streamline the process and be more efficient. I just need to figure out how to do it. I knew that I was doing something wrong.
Right, right.
So I looked at them and I looked at me. I was like, okay, I just need to figure out what I'm doing wrong and then figure out how I can fix it. But it didn't really, I mean, the things that kind of more pushed me back were like more of my family. So my family is, you know, believes in work hard, work hard, work hard, save your money, you know.
Right.
The word invest was never really around when I was growing up. And so when I told my dad that I wanted to start investing in real estate, he was like, that's a stupid idea. You know, people lose all their money in real estate. Look at the real estate crash. And, you know, it's not safe trying to collect money from your tenants. You know, so you might get shot, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I'm like, well, there are very, very successful real estate investors out there. So, you know, it's just like you can look at the fear or you can look at the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I'm always like kind of a crazy opportunity. I'm always looking at like big things that, you know. And so for me, it was like, I know I'm doing something wrong. I just got to figure out what it is.
Now, after all the experience that you've had over the last 8 years, has anything like this ever happened again? Or was this kind of the worst thing that ever happened to you?
That was the worst tenant. I mean, there's like a kind of a worst of everything. So I had like the worst tenant, then I had the worst property, so the worst tenant, it was still a profitable deal. My worst property was not a profitable deal. So that was the one deal that I did that was not profitable. And essentially, I took the advice of my contractor, I found out later, who was unlicensed, and he was having financial difficulties, told me to buy this property because it's going to be easy, you know, rental property, and he could get it all fixed up for $5,500 or whatever. And he's like, yo, you don't even need a property inspection. I already went through the property. And I've never done a deal without getting a private property inspection. This is the first one I did. And so I trusted him, and that property ended up really biting me in the butt when we had so many issues with the city and the property itself. And it was just a mess. I made a whole video on this property. It's called My Worst Real Estate Deal Ever on the Minority Mindset YouTube channel. And so that was the worst home. That was the worst tenant. After that, pretty much everything has been good. I mean, obviously, every property has a little bit of issues here and there. You learn something from every property, but nothing really major.
So for most of your properties, does nothing really happen? Like, are you just getting your rent checks every month and you don't hear from your tenants, and it's not really very eventful?
So I have a good management company now where I don't deal with my tenants at all.
Okay.
So that is like a great feeling.
Yeah.
When you don't have to really worry about anything. And there are little issues here and there. Like, for example, we had to evict a tenant recently, and the home was a mess. So we had to, you know, pay a little bit extra to turn over the home. But it's not too big of a deal. You know, you have other properties that kind of balance it off. You just pay a little bit extra this one time, find a better tenant. And, you know, if it could be a lot worse. But, you know, now that you have the proper management and you're tough on your screening, it's a lot easier and more streamlined where you're getting checks. Yeah, maybe 1 month you'll have a little bit less. Next month you might have a little bit more depending on what work needs to be done. But overall, it's much more streamlined.
Right. Now, looking back at that tenant you had to evict, were there any signs that you should have picked up when that person applied? Or was this just a good tenant that went bad?
So this tenant we had for years, probably about 5 years. And what happened was she wanted to live next to her parents or family that lived like next door. And she came in kind of like in a rush to move in.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, they say the faster they come, the faster they go.
Yeah.
So she came really fast and she started having like little issues like, oh, I'll pay this month, next month, blah, blah, blah. So we would always, you know, I remember because I switched management companies in the middle of this tenant's lease as well. And the old management company was willing to work with her to kind of accept like, okay, if you're going to pay us a month late, we need the late fee. And then, so it was always kind of on and off the way she was paying, but she was still paying.
Mm-hmm.
Switched management companies. And then there was like a little period, a larger period where she didn't pay. And so the management company just went through with the eviction just to get her out because they want someone who's going to pay on time every month. So I said, that's fine. You know, we'll do that. And she was, and it was a few months where she didn't pay too. So.
Okay. And so then did it just one month she just stopped paying or just kind of went off the grid and stopped communicating? Like what, where did things go bad?
Yeah, honestly, I don't really know the exact details because I let the management company kind of handle it and really take charge of all the properties.
But
yeah, I mean, I'm something like that.
So with the eviction, with the contractor that ripped you off, and with those first tenants that sued you, you've definitely had some bad things happen. But overall, are you happy that you bought rentals? Like overall, is it, has there been way more good than bad?
Oh my God, way more good. I mean, I'm just saying these things for learning purposes. Yeah. Like all these, the tenant that sued me, that was a profitable deal. You know, that property is still making me 16, 20, 22% a year return on our money. The tenant that we evicted, that was also a 15 to 17% annual return on our money. Like I'm just talking about the things that happen,
right?
But you know, I let my management company deal with the issues. You know,
yeah, right.
But you know, so I mean, it's business. At the end of the day, things are going to happen.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and yeah, that's the thing. And the other thing with rentals that I think is really important is to buy as many rentals as you can, because if you just have one property and those tenants sue you, and then you get your next tenant and you end up having to evict them, and then the next tenant something else happens, it can really, I guess, like you're just kind of on this roller coaster ride constantly. But if the more properties you have, the more it kind of evens out. So with your eviction, like it sounds like that didn't really ruin your day when you found out you had an eviction, right? Because you've got enough properties that you've got enough where things are going good that the one that's going bad doesn't really affect you. Is that right?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's streamlined to the point where we already have a tenant who's ready to move in. We're just finishing the turnover.
That's great.
You know, it's just having the processes and understanding that things happen. You're going to learn something for every single investment property.
Yeah.
And I've worked with a lot of units.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just things happen. Mm-hmm. It's a part of the business.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Jaspery, tell us more about your YouTube channel and what you're doing on there and where my listeners can find it.
Sure. So our YouTube channel is called Minority Mindset. And the reason we call it Minority Mindset is because it's a mindset of thinking different than the majority of people. And so for us particularly, that means mainly financial things. So starting a business and investing your money. The three things we mainly talk about are entrepreneurship, business, and money. And when I was growing up, I had no guidance on these things. I was always told to be a doctor. And so I didn't really have a mentor or anything like that. I don't even know what a mentor was, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And so this YouTube channel is kind of a way for me to talk about the things that I've learned and to talk about just basic business and money and investing, because nobody told me these things when I was growing up. And so I think it's very important for us to know that. So that's what my YouTube channel is for.
Awesome. Well, I think you're putting out some great content. If anyone wants to check it out, I've got a link to Jaspreet's YouTube channel. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode162. For the entire month of June, I'm experimenting with doing two episodes a week. So I'll see you with the next episode on Thursday. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the show. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new Caramel Chocolate Cold Brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.